Blog Talk Radio.
They can write all this crap all they want. They will not earn the dignity of my response.
Jesus, Gary, what about us? Do we deserve a response?
About this?
Yeah.
No.
Are you kidding me? I got 100 kids unpacking boxes in Denver right now because we told them you would do what it takes to win this thing. I told them. People are sacrificing for you.
And I'm not sacrificing what? Should I sacrifice my privacy, Bill, my self-respect? And it won't just be me that gets dragged down. None of those kids you're talking about will work another campaign where some candidate doesn't have to account for who comes and goes from their bedroom. And that is just the beginning.
Okay, but we're not talking about that right now.
I am talking about that.
We're talking about how you get through today without pissing away everything we've all worked for on this campaign.
Bill, this campaign is about the future, not rumors, not sleaze, and I care about the sanctity of this process, whether you do or do not.
Oh, Gary Hart. Welcome, everybody. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and that clip you just heard was from The Front Runner. This is the new film by Jason Reitman, starring Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart, the former Democratic presidential candidate in 1988, who saw his entire political career ruined in a matter of days because of an extramarital affair that came out into the public. And what was interesting about this movie is its timing, at least for me anyway, it's the timing of it. I remember Gary Hart when I was a kid, and as you'll hear in the interview when I'm talking with Reitman and screenwriters Jay Carson and Matt Bai, I remember Hart as someone who was being covered like nobody else before. This was a transformative figure in the world of politics. And all of a sudden, he was just gone. I had no idea what was going on with him at the time. I was too young, but I knew that suddenly he had vanished. And he's really never reemerged since then. I mean, there's been some stuff coming out about the campaign in the last few months, but overall, Gary Hart never got back into politics after this. And what's interesting is that at the time, as you heard in that clip, Hart really didn't understand why all of a sudden the media was focusing on his personal life, on his what was going on in his bedroom, you know, because before this, the press was more than willing to turn a blind eye to this stuff. All you need to do is look at the time of JFK, when the press really did just kind of turn a blind eye to everything that was going on in terms of, you know, marriage and things outside of it. But all of that changed with Hart. And after that, you know, we had the Bill Clinton scandal, which is obviously very much in the public eye. And the irony is that nowadays we have Donald Trump, and it seems as if extramarital affairs are just sort of commonplace, and we've all become sort of desensitized to it. So it's very interesting, the timing on this film. So I was really excited to talk to Reitman, Bai, and Carson, especially when Matt Bai and Jay Carson were added to the interview later on. And they were additions right at the very end. They were added into the interview, and I was really, really happy about that. Jay Carson is a well-known political strategist, and Matt Bai is the journalist who wrote the book that this movie is based on. So I was really excited to talk with the three of them about this, about the casting of Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart, and sort of how they came up with creating what to me felt like a very real political campaign, not the slicked up stuff that we see from Aaron Sorkin on The West Wing. Political campaigns aren't like that in reality. They're very different. They're very chaotic. And I want to talk to them about how they came up, how they created that for this movie. So here's my interview with Jason Reitman, Matt Bai, and Jay Carson on The Front Runner. I hope you enjoy it. Talk about the movie. Let's talk about The Front Runner a little bit. Now, my first memory of Gary Hart, well, my first memory about politics, I'm really into politics, right? So my earliest memories of politics are Ronald Reagan, because he was everywhere at the time.
He was.
Most visible president at that time ever, I think. And Gary Hart. And I was too young to really know what was going on with Gary Hart.
Yeah.
I just knew that I could, even as a kid, I was maybe 11 years old at the time,
he was being covered like no one else I'd ever seen. Even as a kid, I recognized it. So I guess what I'm curious about is, what are your memories of that event at the time? This is kind of a question for all of you. What were your memories of that event at the time, and how did making this movie kind of inform your opinion of that? Like, how has it changed or anything like that? You know, kind of really digging into it, has it changed it? Has it changed what you thought of it at the time?
It's a really great question, and it's interesting because our collective memory is kind of stratified, and because of that, the way we approached this script was probably different, literally ranging from someone who remembers it, lived through it, and kind of, you know, experienced it in college, and you're kind of cognizant and processing it. I'm guessing you and I are basically the same age, except I was less politically inclined than you were at 10. I was more interested in, you know, where the Back to the Future trilogy was heading. And
trust me, I was into that too.
okay, all right. So you were more aware.
I recognized that something was happening, but I didn't know what. It wasn't until later when I was
headed to a train.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But exactly. But there actually amongst the writers, there was a range of having experienced the first time around and now looking back again. Versus my experience, which was, I don't know this story at all, and I'm only looking at it from the perspective of hindsight, and that really kind of, we found, particularly on the Gary Hart story, it really changes how you view the events.
Mm. Anybody else want to chime in?
I mean, I was just took a bite of muffin, but if you don't mind.
No, that's fine.
And I was a fan also. I was aware of it.
Yeah.
Kind of probably felt this exactly the same. I really knew Reagan. My parents were Democrats, really, we lived in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But Hart was like a thing. Like, one of the first candidates, I was like, oh, that person. Mm-hmm. And I liked him.
Yeah.
And then he was just gone.
Yeah.
And then I really didn't think about it again until 2009 or 10 when Matt called and said, I'm thinking about doing this book. Everybody thinks I'm crazy, but here it is. And he laid out the story, and I just, in my head, I was like, well, that sounds like a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of the span of my hard time, like 20 years between the time that I heard about it and really thought about it again.
I think there is a thing about, you know, I mean, I did live through it as a college student and then revisited it many years later.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is a thing about the 80s, about that period, and he's so emblematic. He was, as you said, he's such an emblematic figure for anyone who lived through that.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a long time we kind of didn't want to revisit the 80s. You know, it was a little embarrassing. It was like a little synthetic, and it was like a confusion. The culture was changing in ways that didn't really feel, you know, 5 or 10 years later, didn't feel like we'd handled it all that well. And so I think Hart got buried in part, you know, buried in the public memory.
Yeah.
In part because he was so identified at this moment that we didn't really feel comfortable spending a lot of time with. And you're right.
It's like, you know, it was an awkward period for the country.
It was like parachute pants.
Like we were like 13 in the country.
It's like parachute pants and Gary Hart.
Photos that nobody wants to look back on.
Technology had enabled us, as I said in the book, I think, like, technology had enabled us to do all of these things, but we hadn't yet figured out how to do them with any elegance. You know, it was kind of, and so I think...
Max
Hedrick. Yeah, and so I think part of going back to this for... I think you had to have that period of time. I think part of going back to him was also going back to that period, not just in our politics, but in our culture, and being able to examine it without wincing.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, he disappeared like nobody else. I mean, he was just gone.
He did.
Gone.
Yeah.
You know?
But that was also by his own choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's,
even so today, it's like, seems like that's virtually impossible. Even if you want to disappear, like, you can't. Yeah. You know, and he was just, I mean, sure, we weren't kind of pre-social media age, I guess, in a way, but...
It's true, but there's something that, as we've gotten deeper into the story, it's one of the great things about working on something like this for a long time and getting, you know, write draft after draft and watch it many, many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've come to really respect about him through this, put aside the scandal, what happened, what didn't happen, the fact that there were things he wouldn't do to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in politics for a long time, and pretty much I don't want to indict every single person I worked for. Most of the people I worked for, when they got into a scandal, they'd walk into the room with me and a few other people and say, what do I need to do to get out of this? I'll do anything. And the fact that Hart both wouldn't do anything, and also that when he left, he left. He actually went away.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for. He didn't have this. He didn't have this narcissistic need to continue to try to be in the spotlight every 3 months, popping back up doing this, popping back up doing that.
I have a close friend who worked for President Obama for a long time, and he said, President Obama is going to give a great gift to the country when he leaves office. I said, what's that? He's going to go away. Referring to some other people that I work for who tend to not go away.
Right.
But I have a lot of respect for Hart for being able to just do that. Say, okay, I'm done.
Have you noticed that? I mean, with the arrival of the movie, it's brought renewed attention to Gary Hart. Now we're hearing more revelations about it now all of a sudden. That, you know, Karl Rove being involved and all this other stuff kind of. It's funny how it's all kind of brought things here laughing, but I mean, but
it's funny because Lee Atwood, but yeah, it's the whole. I'm sure Carl was there somewhere, actually. It's
I know. But it's just kind of funny that it's all. It's kind of brought the whole thing back into the public eye again, and now people are talking about Gary Hart again a little bit. It's a great thing for the movie, of course, you know. But it's just interesting that it's done that.
Well, I think it's. I think it's important. I'm glad it does that because. Not because Gary Hart necessarily deserves a reconsideration, I think he does, and not just because, you know, it's something we love to talk about, but because it's a moment that I think is really important to understanding our politics. I always did. I think, like, what was going on in that moment, having nothing to do with Gary Hart, having to do with the culture of journalism and the celebritizing generally of American life and the collision of entertainment and politics, all of that set us on a course, and there's this moment that's kind of a crucible for it, and to the extent that people want to revisit that moment, I think it helps further their understanding of where we are now.
One of the things I really appreciate about the movie is that it doesn't feel like other political movies that I've seen in a while.
Thank you.
Which I think, I'm trying to figure out how to say it. I think a lot of them kind of take all their cues from The West Wing. maybe that's because Sorkin has a lot to do with
and
them.
From this moment further, all movie and television. We'll feel like The West Wing.
Well, I mean, it does feel like, I think everybody kind of quite from that show.
It's a great show, but it's
nothing against the show.
It ends up being a rip-off, right?
Nothing against the show, which I watched and I enjoyed. But, and I mean this in the best way possible, your movie, to me, feels a little bit more chaotic. Like, I've volunteered in, like, small campaigns before. I've never gotten the impression that they all run, like, slickly well-oiled machines. They all have like some sort of chaos going on, and I felt like that's kind of how this movie felt, like that was going on in his campaign. Like it just kind of felt like flying by the seat of the pants, kind of, which I appreciated. That I kind of liked that. Was I was just wondering if that was sort of an intentional thing that you guys were kind of going for.
Yeah, I think we met and they came over the house. Matt and Jake came over to my house, and I put on the movie The Candidate. Mm-hmm. And we're watching it, but also talking as it's playing. And immediately, both Matt and Jay just start kind of sparking on like these kind of these revelations of how well they got it right. That somehow that movie with Michael Ritchie and Robert Redford, they were able to capture this messiness that you're talking about. To not only just real life in general, but specifically what it's like to be on a campaign from the perspective of the political operative, from the perspective of the journalist. And it became this North Star. How do we do that? How do we do that for this story? How do we make people feel as though they've literally just been dropped into the midst of the madness? Because that's how we feel today. Mm-hmm. We feel like we're trying to make sense out of this chaotic moment in 2018. And that requires making choices. So to put the audience in the position where they have to make choices, we have to create enough chaos, enough conversations happening simultaneously, enough overlapping dialogue and overlapping ideas and imagery and storyline. And it, at that point, it became a question of not, you know, what is the story, but how are we telling it? And they just started pouring in with their stories from their own experiences in their each respective job. The film, you know, became less of a biopic and almost even a little autobiographical.
Hmm. And Jason would always push us to go more real. Like, if we tell a story that sounded too polished, there would be a nugget in there, and he'd be like, no, tell more about that part. Hmm. And a lot of that stuff is where it ended up in the movie. because they were the unpolished, messy human versions. And part of getting, Jason called it chasing real, but like part of getting into that, which is a great term, is that we ended up making a movie. I hope that whether you care about politics or not, it's a very human story, because part of getting into the reality is showing these people as human beings who are stuck in a really difficult spot trying to make difficult choices.
All right, that's my interview with Jason Reitman, Matt Bai, and Jay Carson talking about The Front Runner. It is in theaters now. You can head over to punchdrunkcritics.com to see my review and also to find this interview as well, if you're not already listening to it here on Blog Talk Radio. All right, I'm Travis Hobson, The Punch Drunk Critics. Thanks for listening. Bye.